Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Do I Still Love It? The podcast that reminds you that you can do it. I think he's like, you can do it.
Yeah, that's right.
You can do it.
You can do
you
it.
Can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like burned into all of our memories, I think.
And we're going to get around to doing Austin Powers someday, and we'll be like, yeah, baby. Oh, man. All these movies with their
painful.
Yeah. But you're listening to Do I Still Love It, the nostalgia podcast, where myself, Marshall James,
and I, Laura Weiss,
we'll ask a guest over to watch a movie that they loved when they were kids to see whether or not we still love it now that we're adults. And our returning guest this week is friend, fan of the show, Michael Chow.
Hi, I'm Michael Chow.
I mean, like, I don't really know if he's a fan of the show.
Oh, yeah, Mike, are you?
I listen.
That's really funny to put into his mouth.
You're a fan.
Friend of the show, our number one super fan, can't stop talking about it to all of his friends and family.
Really far.
Michael Chow. So, Michael, welcome back to season two. Do I Still Love
Thanks
It?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited this is back.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back. And today, multi-part reckoning on the 90s career of Adam Sandler as we watch 1998's The Waterboy.
It's one of the, you know, it's not one of the pinnacles.
Uh-huh. Oh, you don't think so?
I mean, it's not Billy Madison or Happy Gilmore.
Well, it's not the career launcher, but I feel like he was still flying high on the Happy Gilmore brand at this
time.
I
want to say that this was the final movie before it started to just like...
I think Big Daddy was okay. Oh, I haven't seen it.
I think Big Daddy was right, the Big where Daddy. It jumped the shark, is my theory. But who knows? Maybe we'll watch today and
so our you're
whole
going through each of the Adam Sandler movies then?
I guess, well, I
feel like I have to because so... I think most people in general would now say that Adam Sandler seems like he's definitely lost whatever it was that really made us all drawn
to him. At
least
as far as like his movie comedies.
Has anyone watched the Netflix Adam Sandler?
Yeah, I watched it.
Yeah,
what did I thought it was great.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I think it's like a nice return to form.
That's nice.
Yeah. That's good. That's okay. That gives me a lot of hope.
It like really reminded me like why I liked him as like a dumb kid living in the suburbs. Like it was just like a nice throwback.
Well, like so speaking of that, tell us a little bit about what Michael Chow, the dumb kid living in the suburbs, was like when you were a big Adam Sandler movie fan.
I think I pretty much sought out like every like big broad comedy. Like I was a big Jim Carrey fan, and then like I think we watched The Waterboy at like a sleepover once, and like I just found it life changing. Like, I just found it so funny.
I know exactly what is going on our poster this week.
Well, life-changing masterpiece. Okay, so for the listeners at home, what do you remember the Waterboy's plot being?
I think it was... So basically, Bobby Boucher is this, like... he's like this, not, I think they're kind of establishing him as slow-witted, but he's more of just like a mama's boy who's like emotionally stunted.
Okay.
And he wants to play football. That's like all he wants to do, but his like overbearing mom just does not want him to do it. And that's basically the plot, and there's just a bunch of hijinks around that.
So it's son rebelling against mother through a football comedy.
Oh, and he has like a hot goth girlfriend is what I remember too.
Do we know who plays the hot goth girlfriend?
I don't remember right now.
She's the, you've seen American History X?
I have, yes.
She's like the Nazi girlfriend
in
that.
Man, she plays a lot of angry, moody women.
She it stirred up a lot of weird feelings as a kid.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think, gosh, American History X. Okay, I don't want to get sidetracked.
Very different film.
Yeah.
lots of flexibility in this person's career.
Yeah.
Yeah. But always plays the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Never the girl.
Never the Nazi. Always the Nazi's girlfriend.
Nazi jokes. A simpler time and place.
Yeah.
So what is it about Adam Sandler's comedy style at the time do you think that you found so funny as a... Like, about what age did you start getting into Adam Sandler movies?
I think
movies?
It must have been, like, probably, like, 7 or 8, I'd assume.
Oh, okay, so you were on the young side.
Yeah. I don't know, just was, like, a very, like, he had, like, a very easy charm and, like, was juvenile, but also had, like, kind of a weird, like, surreal sensibility.
Uh-huh.
Like, you've seen Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Like, the weird ending where, like, Carl Weathers is in heaven with, like, Abe Lincoln and, like, a crocodile.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there was definitely a sort of... unpredictability to Adam Sandler movies that I remember thinking, like, I have no idea what the plot, like,
yeah,
like the plot of Adam Sandler movies are in general, like, very paper thin, mm-hmm. just so that then weird stuff can happen.
Yeah, they're just like stuff in like as much jokes as possible.
Right.
And I just feel like he doesn't do that so much anymore. And I also just feel like, so like a lot of his earlier movies, like Happy Gilmore, The Waterboy, even like Billy Madison, they're like weirdo misfit characters. And now he just plays like himself for the most part, I feel like.
Just sort of angry and jaded.
He's not even that, like, he's not even that excitable. And, like, I remember seeing, like, a bit of Grown Ups on TV, and he's just, like, a regular, like, upper-class white guy now. Uh-huh. Like, it's not as interesting. There's nothing to root for there, really.
I mean, I guess you write from your experience. Sure. For the last 20 years, he's just been an upper-class white man. Yeah. So.
It's true. And I feel like, for me, I was on the Adam Sandler train through, like, Wedding Singer.
Yeah.
And, like Wedding Singer had a real nice charm to
Don't
it.
Don't even talk to me about Wedding Singer. I've seen that movie, like, 400 times. It was one of my favorite films.
Oh, yeah.
It was
great.
Ooh, we'll have to do that one,
oh,
too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, so now we're going to watch The Waterboy, which also includes Rob Schneider.
Yeah.
Part of Adam Sandler's crew. And then Kathy Bates is in this movie.
And she's actually, like, great from what I remember.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kathy Bates is excellent. Oh, so yeah. I feel like she's destined to be
it's
a
also
high
got,
point.
I would consider this the beginning of the Henry Winkler renaissance, because it's the first time he plays, like, a loser character. And now that's, like, pretty much all he plays, because he's a genius at it.
I think, wasn't Henry Winkler the one that came on, like, a few years ago, and he's basically like, I don't care what they cast me as. I didn't work for 20 years. You can cast me as literally anything. I'll play literally anything for
that.
A paycheck.
Yeah.
Well, I think Henry Winkler is...
I could be wrong. I could be thinking of someone else, but...
Well, no, Henry Winkler, I feel like his big thing was he realized, like, that there's a lot of comedy in mm-hmm. being a living icon of such a character as, like, such a caricature that is the Fonz.
Sure.
That... you know, it's sort of, he's got that sort of William Shatner thing going on, where both of them had such iconic defining characters earlier in their careers that now they can play total goofy weirdos. And part of the joke is we're like, it's the Fonz.
Yeah, it used to be cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's also like the case for like Matthew Broderick, who was like Ferris Bueller, and then he was like this loser teacher in Election.
Right. Now I feel like he's always mugging at the camera like Ferris Bueller.
Like, that's just the trajectory that like every single cool person eventually takes. Like, you think that's where Ryan Gosling's gonna end up?
Yeah, you either die young and cool or live long enough to be a joke.
Oh man, Ryan Gosling as like a sniveling old teacher character would be
that'd be kind of
really
great.
Really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It requires him to not stay handsome forever.
Yeah, I mean, you go two ways. Like, Matthew Broderick really was surprising in how he aged, because he aged to look like a sniveling teacher.
Whereas you have, like, Sean Connery, who just ages like a fine wine, and it doesn't matter what he's playing, he's just always that, like, roguish, beguiling, handsome gentleman, even if he's playing extremely strange characters.
Well, the same thing can be said for Clint Eastwood. Like, I was driving through Hollywood last night, and I saw a billboard for a new Clint Eastwood movie.
Oh, The Mule?
I don't know what it is. All I know is I was just dumbstruck at the fact that Clint Eastwood, who's like 200 years old now.
Yeah, he's like Crypt Keeper aged.
It's still like... heading films that are like a tour de force by this man. That
I mean, to be fair, he's directing his own movie, so
that's a good point. And he's got so much money that he's like, look at my new blockbuster. And I'm like, that's nice, Clint.
And when he's managed to like direct a decent number of like really impressive films, so now he's at that sort of Robert Redford stage where like he can star in, write, and direct anything, and people will be like, a tour de force. What a talent to be able to do all these things at once at your decrepitude.
It's funny, though, because this is, like, his third swan song, as far as I understand.
Right, exactly.
Well, like, Gran Torino was one, and then so was, like, Trouble with the Curve, and now it's The Mule. Like, he can just retire if he wants to.
I think he just is going to keep writing swan songs, and then he gives it, like, 2 years. He's like, fuck, I'm still alive. Guess I gotta make another swan song.
It's like the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. That's so like, funny. Mick Jagger's also like 102, and they gotta keep doing farewell tours every 5 years because one of these days it's gonna be the farewell. And then they'll be able to be like, oh, you guys remember the last farewell tour?
It's like you want to say goodbye to the party, but you gotta say goodbye to every single person.
Basically, aging celebrities are like people doing a Jewish goodbye. They have to keep coming around saying bye to everyone multiple times. They just can't leave the party.
Man, this conversation really took a winding road.
And speaking of Jewish goodbyes, so Adam Sandler's The Waterboy.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're about to watch it. Do you think you will still love it?
Based on his new special, I feel like if I still like that sort of humor, I think I'm still going to like this.
That's a good reflection. I'm hesitant, as some of his more recent work has been, like, less than enjoyable. Like, was he funny and then lost it for a while, or did we just think he was funny because we were stupid kids?
So, like, my theory is all... So, I think he was very sincerely funny, and then I think he wanted to transition into, like, serious movies. Like, I think Punch Drunk Love is, like, a fantastic movie. It's one of my favorite movies.
I love Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, yeah, it's a great movie. But, like, people didn't really see it, and then I think people just kept offering him a lot of money to go on vacation with his friends, and who doesn't take that deal?
Right.
Oh, so what we're saying is, in the later films, his heart was really no longer in the tired concept.
Yeah,
right.
I like that.
Now, this is the Water Boy. This is still at the height of, like, Adam Sandler, like, cementing his name in the comedy world.
Yeah.
So, won't you join us in checking out 1998's The Water Boy?
He was one of a kind, the last of his breed. The world's finest water boy.
Now that's what I call high quality H2O.
Bobby Boucher was a lonely boy.
Smell like you could use a shower, I'm thinking.
Everybody else got friends, Mama. I just want some too.
You don't have what they call the social skill.
My name is Bobby Boucher.
That's why you never have any friends, except for your mama.
Constantly tormented by everyone. Until one day...
Somebody hurt you, my boy.
You gotta defend yourself here, Bobby, or they're gonna ride you for the whole season.
They pushed him too far.
Stop making fun of me.
Oh, dang. He's killed, though.
Now...
Play football for this team.
My mama ain't gonna let me play no football.
They're going to train him.
Is there any sport that you do watch?
Wrestling.
I want you to do to Casey what Captain Insano does to the bad guy.
And turn him loose.
Ah! Visualize all those people that have been mean to you, and then I want you to attack.
What's the matter with you, boy? You too stupid?
No.
No what?
Everyone will feel his pain.
The amazing 31-year-old freshman set a new NCAA record by sacking the quarterback 16 times.
And you are so sexy.
The Water Boy's influence now reaches far beyond college football.
From Touchstone Pictures and the director of The Wedding Singer.
My God!
Adam Sandler.
There's something wrong with his medulla oblongata.
You playing the foosball behind my back?
The Water Boy.
Visualize an attack.
How you doing, boy?
No, no, no!
All right, well, and that was The Water Boy and Michael Chow. Your immediate thoughts?
I was just commenting earlier, like, I was laughing, like, really hard every couple minutes, so I think I still really like it.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised at the number of times where I literally laughed out loud.
Yeah.
Laura Weiss?
I didn't have as gregariously a positive experience.
Sure.
I was too hung up from the very first scene by what a, in the year 2018, this portrayal of a person who might have, you know, lower capacities of intelligence
sure.
is, like, very bad.
Yeah, it's not great.
I mean, the character, it was interesting, like, it really bothered me the first scene, but then, I mean, it kind of got to the point where the character was fleshed out enough that it didn't, like, get to me.
He does pass his high school, test?
GED. With a 97.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like an A+, y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah, the character of Bobby Boucher is, like, a strange sort of riff on Forrest Gump and Sling Blade,
yeah.
Like, where the
character, Rudy.
A little Rudy, where like they have a heart of gold, but they are dumb as a bag
of
hammers.
They're like simple men.
Yeah, simple men who have a deep, important relationship with their mother.
Yeah.
And usually troubling relationships with women that have trouble with the law.
Yeah. Except Feruzabalk, like, rules in this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Feruzabalk
You definitely want her in your corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. She exhibits not only a willingness to commit violence on your behalf, but also seems pretty handy with a tool set. And
I mean, like, willingness to commit violence on your behalf is an understatement. She seems to truly enjoy committing violence.
She, like, offers to murder the, like, proctors for the GED.
Right.
And yeah, with a big smile on her face, like, I'm serious?
Yeah, Feruzabalk is perfect casting for this because she has crazy eyes.
Yeah.
Like, anytime there are any pictures of, like, check out this girl with crazy eyes on the internet, they always have the same eyes Feruzabalk has.
But she's, like, very charming, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, no, she's great.
Yeah, yeah. You like her, and you like her for liking Bobby this whole time.
I think my favorite scene, actually, like, the one thing I will say about this movie is it has two female characters, but they're both very, sometimes, against each other. They're both very in control, like, dominating women.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think, actually, my entire favorite scene out of this movie is when they get in a fight.
Oh, like at the dinner table?
At the dinner table over him. And it's so uncomfortable. He is so uncomfortable and has some of the best lines of the entire movie.
He's like, I'm going to go hang myself now.
She displays his, like, sheets that have been urinated on just in the lawn.
She knew the girl he liked was coming over for a barbecue, and she hung his piss-stained sheets.
She's kind of a monster, but you kind of, like, you empathize with her to an extent.
To an extent, only because the arc.
She gets redeemed.
Her,
yeah.
And we understand how she made all these bad decisions.
Oh, yeah. She's very insecure because, like, her husband left her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, so, like, my family is from Alabama, and I grew up in the South. And I feel like while this is obviously a big caricature of people from the South, there are certain, like, tropes, and specifically strong, domineering mothers who, like, oftentimes cow their sons is, like, feels all too typical from, like, thinking about my childhood. Like, this isn't how my mother is, but I have relatives and friends who, like, their mom would control literally every aspect of their day. And you are expected, as a respectable child, to just go with whatever they said, which what leads to sometimes in the South where, like, full-grown adults will still talk to their mother as if they are, like, a 10-year-old. Like, they'll be like, yes, mother. Yes, mom.
So does that lead to, like, people like Bobby Boucher?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's maybe, like, part of the joke is, like, what if it was taken even further? Like, what if this domineering Southern mother, like, kept their child from experiencing anything in life? Like, what would that person turn into?
Everything's a devil.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and man, and everything is the... I remember... growing up and, like, Harry Potter is the devil, Magic the Gathering is the devil, like, everything is the devil. Anything that is not church or yard work is the devil.
Marshall received a letter in the mail from his aunt once with a clipping from a newspaper about how Magic the Gathering was the gateway to the occult.
Oh, yeah, it was from one of her, like, Southern Baptist magazines, and it's, like, harmless hobby or gateway to Satan.
Did you get this in, like, middle school, or when did you get this?
Yeah, it was probably about middle school-ish is when I started playing Magic, and I think about a year or two into me playing Magic, she, like, I brought some of my Magic cards down to Alabama, and she was just, like, scandalized.
Did she think they were, like, tarot cards?
Well, I know it's like, you know, there was that fear that, like, Dungeons and Dragons was leading our children into witchcraft. And so this game was actually called Magic. Sure. And they're like, they're pretending to cast spells like Satan worshippers.
So you still have that article.
I use it. Really? I have it inserted in the front of my Magic the Gathering trade binder because it's, like, classic. It's so funny because it's obviously, like, a hit job because it sets up with, like, an interview with a, like, a, a player from a recent tournament. Mm-hmm. And the deck they are describing is just filled with, like, the cards that have the most, like, oh, my deck is a dark ritual-fueled hatred deck that plans on. And these are just the names of cards. Sure. But they're like, oh, do you hear what's coming out
like,
of their
the
mouth?
Headline is like, is magic leading your children to Satanism? That's,
well, yeah, no, I've read it so many times that it literally was harmless hobby or gateway to the occult.
Honestly, if I saw it as a kid, like, I want to play this game.
Yeah. So the Water Boy, the movie, like you said, it doesn't have, like, too intense of a plot. No. It's like your most typical...
It's like real bare bones.
It's very underdog story. Mm-hmm. And so, you know from the very beginning, like, okay, they're probably going to win the big game. So, yeah. Like, it's that... The story of it is not that important. Instead, this movie is like a bunch of weird characters interacting in funny little vignette scenes that string together.
Like, it's not quite like a parody of the sports movie. It's just like a very weird version of the sports movie.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a parody.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, because it has all of the bits. And I remember when we were watching the final, the championship game, the Bourbon Bowl game, you commented like, oh, man, the sports action in this is, like, pretty decent.
Yeah, like, it's engaging. Like, you're rooting for the Mud Dogs.
Yeah, like, because Bobby Boucher is a linebacker, so he's doing all the intense tackles, he gets to do, like, pretty much the best part of football, which is watching dudes get creamed.
Yeah.
And he, like, smashes... We see, like, 30, 40 different, like, smash tackles over the course of... And every single one of them... is looks painful.
And I think it's important right now to point out why they looked so painful and why they became so painful, which is Bobby Boucher has such an incredible imagination that he can fully hallucinate other faces and words coming out of those fake faces on other people's bodies that make him so incredibly angry that he will murder faces.
Yeah, this is like a reoccurring gag where people will have a mental break and faces will morph into different faces.
Yeah, like they become unhinged from reality. If anything, this movie is a movie about the power of visualization to accomplish goals.
Laura, you're pointing out there's two scenes where, like, two different characters are told how to imagine, and then they just have a full-on breakdown.
Yeah, exactly. That is true. It's not only Bobby Boucher.
It's also Henry Winkler.
And the
Coach
kicker.
Klein.
Coach Klein. Oh, and the kicker, yes.
Oh, yeah. Because he imagines the football turns into a literal... So the
Klansman hit.
Yeah. So the linesman... I'm not a football fan. That's a linesman?
The kicker.
The kicker.
The kicker.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hey. The kicker is a played by a black actor, decides to, like, channel his energy into kicking, like, a Klansman's head.
Yeah.
Which was very satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a very satisfying scene.
Oh, yeah.
Needless to say, he really, that was a good kick.
And, yeah, and so, and but then also Henry Winkler is, like, told to visualize, and he gets lost in the hallucination to the point that it weirds out the Water Boy, who doesn't get weirded out by
He imagines
anything.
His rival coach as, like, a literal baby and just starts talking to him in baby talk for about, like, 3 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
So Henry Winkler, so he's in this, he plays our underdog coach. There's a point early in the movie where we see his butt with a Roy Orbison tattoo on it.
Well, the deal is, there's like a, cause he's saying, you don't have to do everything your mom tells you. Like, my mom didn't want me to get a Roy Orbison tattoo. And then he just drops shorts and he's got a full Roy Orbison.
It's like, what mama don't know won't hurt her. And I'm like, that's not Henry Winkler's actual ass.
Definitely not. That ass was a good 15, 20 years younger than him.
So I want to know, who is Henry Winkler's butt double? If you're listening and you know, we want to know. Tweet at us at Do I Still Love It.
Is there like a butt double for him to be?
You are Henry Winkler's butt double. We want you on the
show. We want you on the show. Please come. We will review any movie you like.
Do you think he's been the butt double for other actors?
Do you think he's been the butt double for Henry Winkler on multiple occasions? Like, do you think Henry Winkler picked him out of, like, a photo book from a talent agency? Like, yes, that's what my butt looks like. Okay, so we got to talk about foosball, Laura.
Yeah, so in this, he brings up football in front of his mother for the first time, and she's like, ugh, foosball? And it was an interesting moment for me because I have, like, said that for 20
refer to it as foosball
refer to it jokingly as foosball in that voice for like 20 years without knowledge that I got it from this movie. So when she said it, I was like, Oh, that reference was deep. That got, like, ingrained.
Right. Well, I think it's the same with, like, You Can Do It. Like,
yeah. Well, I knew You Could Do It was from this.
I think I had forgotten that You Can Do It is from this. I think right around the time that, like, Barack Obama was, like, running for president and he was doing a lot of the, yes, we can. There were, like, a lot of people who would also say, like, we can do it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Obama used to do the Rob Schneider impression on the campaign trail.
Remember when he's on the campaign trail and he'd be like, we can do it.
I don't think this happened.
It didn't happen either.
You took a tally of how many times Rob Schneider said this.
Yeah, so Rob...
Which is his only line, except for...
But they wait for it. He doesn't show up until, like, midway through the movie.
He doesn't show up until, like, an hour in.
And when he shows up, in the scene he shows up, he says, you can do it, or some variance of it, 8 times.
Within, like, about 2 minutes?
Yes. There was a part where he said it for, like, the second time, and I was like, oh, well, now that they finally got around to him, they're just going to have him say it once every 30 seconds. And then, as if I was Cassandra, 30 seconds later, he says it, and then a minute later, he says it again. And he, like, 8 times in that, like, pep rally scene, he says some version of you can do it.
I would love to know how Rob Schneider got this role, why this role was written, this role was clearly written for Rob Schneider.
Sure.
I really like Marshall's... In the episode we just did earlier from Home Alone 2, Marshall mentions that he believes that Rob Schneider has some sort of, like, dirt on Adam Sandler.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That he uses in order to get into every single one of his movies in some regard.
Yeah. He is so unnecessary in this movie. And now, watching as I find him grating. Like, I don't find that you can do it funny at all.
Sure. Well, but is it because we know so much about Rob Schneider now?
You know, I don't know. I think maybe just...
Because it certainly colors things, the fact that he's an anti-vaxxer. That's not great.
Well, but I think, like, you know, we just watched Home Alone 2, and I don't think he's bad in Home Alone 2. He's just playing a weird, like, kind of weasel,
right.
Which, you know, he's good at
a
playing.
A dumb weasel.
A dumb weasel.
Yeah.
And so I don't think... I, you know, like, Rob Schneider's not an awful, he's not, like, a murderer or anything
sure.
like that. Like, that would, you know, I don't know I could watch The Cosby Show now knowing what
sure.
we know.
Yeah.
But, like, Rob Schneider has bad beliefs,
yeah.
but I don't know if he's definitively an awful human being.
Sure, yeah.
So,
you just don't think he's funny in this.
I just don't think he's very funny
in this.
I don't
know if he's ever been funny. And so that's the question that's hard for me is like, where did your career come from?
Well, he's always been the guy that just says, like, the catchphrase, because back in SNL, he was the, like, getting copies guy.
Yeah, the Richmeister. Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it is he's good at delivering a catchphrase.
And he'll say
and
it, like, 1,000
things.
Times.
What a skill.
I guess somebody, he's so good at, I guess he's just so perfect for playing the throwaway
sure.
sidekick
they
character.
Bring back this character into, like, a couple other Adam Sandler movies, so, like, people were like jonesing for it in the 90s
for the you can do it guy. Yeah, he was not my favorite pointless character in this movie.
Nah.
My favorite pointless character in this movie was the character of Farmer Fran, played by Blake Clark.
He's actually great in this movie. It's like pre-Boomhauer too.
Yeah, yeah. So Blake Clark is the gentleman who's somewhat like John Goodman. He's got sort of a chummy guy, but his joke that never gets old is that he's like a deep in the bayou Creole guy whose patois is so bad
it's
no one,
like,
can understand
totally
what he's saying.
Totally inarticulate.
But he's, like, so chummy and cheerful that
yeah.
everyone just sort of smiles and nods whenever he's just like... and apparently has pierced nipples, we
yeah.
find out in the final scene.
Which, during the very final scene, as we're waiting to find out if the ball gets caught and the final touchdown gets made, and all of this tension is going on and everything's going on in slow-mo, they
sexy
suddenly,
slimo.
They suddenly cut to him, and he is, like, rubbing his nipples like he's orgasming in slow motion in the moment of this drama.
It's perfectly timed.
I will admit, it's perfectly timed.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, kind of the gag going on there, and also with Clint Howard's character, is, like, throughout the South, there are very few professional sports teams. But sports are such a big part of American culture that in the South, college sports are almost like a religion.
Yeah.
Like Alabama has no professional teams in any sport. Mm-hmm. So University of Alabama and Auburn University, there's religions built around their sports teams, especially around football. So that sort of idea that like watching a really great sports play gets people off is not far from the mark.
Not at all.
And so I thought like, okay, that's very believable. Yeah. And like, and Clint Howard's character is this like character who seems his entire life is just based around watching football, even though he has nothing to do with the team.
And doesn't seem to understand like who any of the players are, at least in the running gag that he just like keeps like misattributing like who anything is.
Yeah, he doesn't know what the positions are. He doesn't know who's famous for playing what position. He just like watches the game and gets excited about it.
Speaking of Clint Howard, like, I think it's sad that every time Clint Howard pops up in a thing, they have to address the fact that he's ugly.
Yeah. That is, like, a recurring gag. Like, so Clint Howard, who is Ron Howard's baby brother, and Ron Howard, who's a very successful writer-director and narrator of Arrested Development.
Yeah. Which Clint Howard shows up in, too, as an ugly guy.
Right, like, the kind of the... Clint Howard has a career because his brother Ron puts him in things.
Yeah.
And then because he gets put in things, he has a resume, so he then gets to be in The Waterboy or Austin Powers again. Yeah. He plays like a weirdo, ugly character.
But like they always have to bring it up, and I feel like real bad for Clint Howard.
Because unless maybe he wants to be known as the ugly guy because it helps his career, and so in his writer... He like
you're actually probably
says,
right.
Every single time I'm in this, there needs to be a reference to the fact that I'm ugly, so I'm remembered as the ugly guy, and I get cast more as the ugly.
It's like Buscemi is the weird guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. You got to just sort of own it after a while. Yeah, because there've been like several comedians who were known for being like the fat guy, and then they'll lose weight, and then they will stop being cast in things, and they were like, oh shit, it's important to my brand to stay fat. And so maybe it's important to the Clint Howard. I mean, it is. Like, Clint Howard, we know of him as the ugly guy in all those movies. So, I mean, I feel bad for him, but he lives in a very nice house. I don't feel too bad.
He's getting paid.
Yeah. He's got that paper. So, yeah. Okay. So, Fairuza Balk is in this, and she's, like, crushing it. She plays it so well. And and as Laura points out, she is rocking 90s tough girl attire.
Oh, yeah.
And this is right after The Craft, so she's, like, got her 90s tough girl persona down.
Yes. I think it is important to note that we did watch a very gratuitous boob grab in the middle of... By Clint Howard. In the middle of, like, the wholesome moment... where they show up.
The hero come back.
Yeah,
they want him to come back. So,
Mama fakes a coma.
Because she hates foosball.
And she goes to the hospital, which in my opinion is the most fantastical piece of this entire thing. Because there is no way that a poor woman living in the bayou is going to waste the ridiculous amount of money that she can't afford to go into the hospital
to stay
overnight.
They bring in the donkey into the hospital.
It's so true.
Her hospital room is enormous.
And so he decides that he's made a terrible mistake and he must turn his back on his football dreams because he practically killed his mother. And they hold a candlelight vigil outside of the window.
On New Year's Eve.
On New Year's Eve. At midnight, the ball drops on the TV. He's like, hey,
being
Mom.
Being hosted by the devil.
Yeah.
Dick Clark.
Yeah, Dick Clark's on the screen and she's in a coma and he's sitting there and he says, hey, look who's on the TV, Mom. The devil.
It's a great joke.
It's pretty good. But they show up. One of my favorite parts of their candlelight vigil is in order to stop the wind from hitting the candles, all of the candles are inside Dixie cups.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, no, it was real trashy. and then Fairuza Balk stands up and she gives this speech. And then Clint Howard gives this speech. And
about
then
being ugly.
And then Clint Howard starts crying. Fairuza Balk holds him. And then he grabs her breast in the middle of this, like, scene that's all about good things. It was very...
And then she just sort of pushes him away, which I'm just like, wait, no, she would have murdered him.
Yeah.
She's like this close to murder all the time.
You think, but that's the one thing that women are taught to put up with. So, that one bothered me.
It's part of the movie that does not age well.
Yeah, it didn't age well. Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, her character, Vicky Valancourt, is, again, like you were saying, our two main female characters are both super strong, intelligent, domineering women. And Chow, you made the comment about, like, this movie has interesting messages about masculinity.
Yeah, because it's like Bobby is, like, portrayed as, like, not manly because he's not, like, channeling his anger. And then finally he's able to get it all out. And, like, now he's finally achieved some sort of value in it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then strangely, Henry Winkler, again, another sort of cowed, weak man.
Yeah.
So in a way, this movie is a bit about the kind of weak man overcoming the trolly,
like the
macho.
Yeah,
it's like the betas somehow coming from behind and beating the alphas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually do want to point out something. Henry Winkler's character does not channel his anger.
Mm.
Henry Winkler's character challenges his lost confidence that the other guy stole from him.
Yeah.
And he also neutralizes his threat. So I think it's important to note that one person learned how to harness their anger. One person relearned how to harness their confidence and their brain.
That's a good point.
Good point. There's some redeeming moral value to Henry Winkler's story.
No, Henry Winkler's story is actually great because he is the bullied character who had his entire life stolen from him by this other... Ooh, I hate that coach.
Yeah.
That guy makes my
skin crawl. Red Boyu.
He's a great actor. He may like really makes you hate him.
He did a great job. But we should probably point out really quickly that the plot point is that Rhett stole Henry Winkler's playbook back in the 70s.
This is great.
This scene is great. The flashback scene, again, starring Henry Winkler, who at this point is, he's past middle age. And the actor who plays Red Boyu,
he's probably 65.
He's probably 65.
They don't do any makeup to make them seem like college kids, which they're supposed to be in this scene.
They just throw an afro over each of them.
They just have their sweet 70s threads and afro wigs, and then they use like Jive Daddy and stuff like that.
And the entire scene is in black and white except for the green notebook.
Yeah.
The MacGuffin.
Yeah, exactly. That actually reminds me, we should point out Chekhov's water.
So this movie has multiple MacGuffins, and one of them is a present Bobby Boucher presents to Vicky on the night that she first kisses him, which is magic water that was blessed by an Eskimo shaman from a glacier in Alaska.
And it's like permanently cold.
Yeah.
And it also
eternally cold.
It's glowing like the type of aquamarine that you believe water is if you're five and have never seen the ocean.
It's like a neon Gatorade.
Yeah. And in the critical scene when Bobby needs to be recovered from a particularly bad hit, Vicky busts it out and Chow goes, "Ah, Chekhov's bottle of water."
Like, you bring out the bottle of water, somebody has to drink it by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And then in a perfect callback to the very first line of this film, she puts it in his mouth. He bounces up onto his feet like a kangaroo and says, "That's some high-quality H2O.
Which for at least the next decade, every time I took a drink of water, I would quip that to all my friends.
Oh, wow.
Well, see, I mean, I think part of the thing this movie made me really remember is, you know, when these movies came out around the time that I was like 10 and 11 and 12, like, the key to being a funny person in your middle school among your group of guy friends is literally just quoting funny movies. So you'd quote Tommy Boy and Adam Sandler movies and things you saw on SNL.
Austin Powers.
Yeah, that's all this is just
are
like
making...
Are
comedies less quotable now?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know
the
if I go to
see a lot of
comedy.
The last thing I can think of is like 4-year-old Virgin has a probably now problematic scene where like, I know how you're gay. That's like the last thing I can think of, honestly.
Yeah, well, do we have a whole lot of, like, I guess, like, yeah, I mean, like, the Anchorman and stuff like that, but those movies are a decade old
Yeah, those
now.
Are forever ago.
Are there, do comedies even get made anymore?
I saw someone on the Emmys this year point out, basically, like, drama and comedy, at this point, comedies are just dramas that are 30 minutes long.
Yeah, like the dramedy has replaced comedy. And I wonder, is that a sign of everyone's growing apprehension with how serious everything in the world really is becoming, sure, that it's hard to just laugh all the time.
I feel like a lot of, did you see Game Night?
No.
Game Night's, like, a pretty fun movie, but, like, it also has to be, like, a thriller. And I feel like no comedies are just pure comedies anymore.
Yeah, does anybody make just weird screwball Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell-style comedies anymore? I mean, I guess Will Ferrell and they're going to be...
Oh, John C. Reilly.
Yeah. So Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are going to do, like, that Sherlock Holmes movie soon.
Sure.
And so that's probably going to be a screwball comedy.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, I think screwball has sort of fallen away as dramedy has taken its place.
I mean, I guess the closest thing you have these days is, like, the whole group that was behind The League.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the Jason Mantzoukas and...
That's true.
Yeah.
Have they done a movie recently together as, like, a...
I think most of that stuff is more, like, stuck on TV shows.
Yeah, I guess like
Always Sunny. And
yeah,
stuff
TV
like
is kind of where comedy reigns now.
Yeah.
It's hard now, I think, to sustain 2 hours worth of people's attention just trying to be funny.
Well, like Girlstrip is huge, right?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Girlstrip. There are still like a handful of really big comedies. They're just kind of few and I don't know. There aren't that many anymore.
Mm. There's no space with all the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
As superhero popcorn movies have taken over the scene. Yeah. Whatever happened to you, comedies? Probably it's just Adam Sandler started making bad ones and everyone's like, ooh, comedies maybe not, it's dead now. Did you kill it, Adam Sandler?
I think it's also a little bit harder to make comedies now because you actually have people calling you out if you are doing shitty, representations of people and you're making off-color jokes, because this movie would not have landed now.
Yeah.
It's not the most problematic movie I've ever seen, but its core character is not something that would be accepted by, it might still be accepted by parts of the country, but other parts of the country would just be like, this is trash, it is canceled, we are done.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's definitely a certain amount of internet culture that would have a great problem with Bobby Boucher, but at the same time, the fact that he is never explicitly mentally handicapped in any way, his thing is he just, like you said, he doesn't necessarily sound intellectually stunted, he's emotionally stunted, which makes him really incapable of communicating in any way other than this sort of like baby boy talk.
Yeah.
Because he's so dominated by his mom.
Established as intelligent.
Yeah.
So the problem with him is nurture.
Yeah.
Nurture, not nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although this movie
does love his mama.
Yeah. This movie does use the word retard twice.
But it's usually by like bullies.
But it's by bullies. Yeah. Because this movie came out before, like it was the mid-2000s, really was the time where everyone wised up and like, we're not going to say that word anymore.
Yeah.
So it's still one of the more shocking things when doing Do I Still Love It is that there was a time period where, like, even nowadays, bullies in movies just don't say that.
Yeah,
because
you're
probably right. Because it's just not, like, we're just going to try and let that word as a pejorative die away.
Sure. So, as he should.
Oh, yeah. So it's just interesting when it comes up. And along that same sort of line, this is a movie where, despite having only two female characters, it does pass the Bechdel test in the...
In a 5-second...
In
conversation.
They bond over a fan boat.
Yeah, Mama and Vicky Valancourt repair a fan boat, and that's a thing that is not a man, so...
No. I mean, they established early on that, like, Vicky is, like, a mechanic whiz.
Good job on that, Waterboy.
So, like, regarding comedies, like, there used to be, like, a big era full of, like, major comedy stars. Is that really much of a thing anymore? Where, like, Adam Sandler would just basically had his own franchise, and so did, like, Jim Carrey had a bunch of those.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think that this next generation, most of those people are women.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got the Kate McKinnon. You've got the Leslie Jones. And those two, like, if I think of comedy stars right now, those are the two I think of instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, we basically just stated the Ghostbusters reboot cast.
Well, but I think that was kind of the appealing thing of the Ghostbusters reboot cast was the idea is like, we're going to take all of these like comedy stars right now and put them in one movie together. How could this possibly fail?
Yeah.
It's by trying to reboot something that didn't need to be rebooted.
I still honestly think it's, I wish it was better. I love that cast so much.
Right. I
forget, who was the fourth?
Kristen Wiig, right?
Kristen Wiig.
Oh, that is a great.
It's like one of the best casts.
Great. That is so. Oh, I'm so sad it didn't work out.
And I think the and not to necessarily get off topic on this, but I think the really the only problem I really see with the female Ghostbusters movie is that because they positioned it as a reboot,
telling the same story,
same basic story, but also. You take a movie as beloved as Ghostbusters, considered one of the best comedies ever.
Yeah.
Like, if you are going to say, that's not good enough, we're going to do it again.
Sure.
Like, you can't do...
This time with women.
You can't do that without failing. Because there are certain movies that, like, if they were like, we're going to reboot the Rocky Horror Picture Show, it's like, no, you're just going to fail at it. And I'm sure they just failed at it.
Yeah, they rebooted it about 2 years ago. It was a live TV version.
Darren Criss played...
Oh. It was one of those like where they do like live versions of like major Broadway things.
Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah, I feel like all of those have been odd. Yeah. But like I think the all female Ghostbusters movie could have totally succeeded if it was positioned as just a continuance of the series.
Sure.
Like I thought Kate McKinnon's character, who's this total like science nerd, and she even. In the way they dress her, she's obviously the Egon replacement. Yeah. If they had just positioned her as Egon's daughter, who's the one who's all into paranormal science because her dad was a famous paranormal scientist, then there you go. Then it's off to the races. It's not trying to replace that old thing. It's just continuing that thing you love. Right. And I think that would have tamped down a ton of the criticism. Chow, what about this movie is different than you remember from being a child?
I probably certainly didn't laugh as hard as I did in, like, elementary school.
There were certain jokes that, like, I think back in the day, I think I laughed a lot more at the funny voices people are doing. Mm. Whereas this, there is a lot of good comedic timing, a lot of funny bits. There's a minor character who's, like, a professor.
Yeah, it was just, like, Colonel Sanders.
Like Colonel Sanders. And he gets abused a lot in this movie, physically attacked a lot in this movie.
Well, he emotionally abuses.
Oh, yeah, he's terrible.
What's his...
to Bobby, right?
Bobby, in front of a group
He calls
people.
Out his mom.
Yeah.
Twice.
And that, I feel like,
Colonel
to me,
Sanders.
To me, that was one of the most unbelievable things. No one disrespects people's mothers in the South. That's a...
Colonel Sanders deserved everything he got.
And he got two black eyes and a broken arm.
That's the thing. Like I was
and a concussion.
I was expecting like the Brad comedy to like continue to be super funny. It was always funny. Like when the Colonel Sanders professor gets hit in the head by that ball.
Yeah, the physical comedy in this movie is very
Marshall
funny.
Literally reran that scene just so he could see him get hit in the head again.
I mean, it's great. The physical comedy in this is great, which you would hope for a movie about football. So there's a lot of physical action. And so that part really holds up. And there really isn't too much in this movie that I found questionable.
No.
Like, do you think this is a movie that you would show to kids about your age now?
I think so. I think it's, like, it's a dumb comedy, but I think it's, like, one of the better dumb comedies. And, like, there's an art form to that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because you can make a bad dumb comedy and it's just unwatchable, but, like, I think this is pretty good.
And this also may just be a dumb... comedy that doesn't go very gross.
No.
Which I appreciated.
Yeah, it's not like a Fairley Brothers comedy. Which, like, I'm fine with those, but...
There's a time and place.
Sure.
The grossest thing is really what they're eating.
Yes. There's a running gag that Mama Boucher is always making bizarre swamp delicacies.
My favorite part is she tries to feed him a boa restrictor. He says, what part of the snake are we going to eat? She says, well, it's all basically one thing, but the closest thing I'm going to say is his knee. And then he says, great, what are we having for dessert? And then there's a zap outside. She looks out the window and she goes, squirrel. And I really like the snappiness of that set of dialogue.
Kathy Bates is like pretty incredible.
Yes, Kathy Bates is on fire in this movie.
I would nominate both Kathy Bates and Henry Winkler for Oscars for this movie.
My goodness. What a statement. Bold.
But I mean, like, yeah, Kathy Bates, I mean, she's wonderful in everything, and I was really glad to see her be great in this.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes you see actors that you have a lot of love and respect for in a movie, and you're like, what are they doing
like,
in this
movie?
She's not
slumming it. She's, like, really killing it in this movie.
And she's completely owning this weird like, she's got a little... You could see shades of misery.
Sure.
The way that she's controlling and, like, don't leave me. Yeah.
She plays it like a person in spite of like how the character is written.
I would say in general, that's the thing about this movie that is probably the strongest, is regardless of how absolutely ridiculous this movie is and how it just kind of like whatever eye roll the entire plot and characters are, they are committed.
Yeah.
From the jump, everyone is 110% committed to this ridiculous.
Yeah, they're all on the same level.
We had real CNN sportscasters in this movie. There's a funny bit in the Bourbon Bowl where the color commentators are, you know, they're doing what color commentators do, stating like, you know, he's really got to get in there and like penetrate the defense. And one will look at the other, he's like, I know.
That was such a, I found that whole shtick to be very odd. I mean, maybe it's really funny if you watch a ton of football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it seemed to take, it took a little bit, it took away from it, from your role a little bit.
Like, it's weird that like this Brad Comey just like sitting in these moments though. Like, I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Well, this brings us to our title question. Do I still love it? Michael Chow.
I still love it. I'm sorry.
I mean, laughing while you say I still love it about a comedy is a pretty good vote of confidence.
Yeah.
I'll say that I think I'm pleasantly surprised that I really enjoyed it. We were like belly laughing the whole time. I do still love it.
I didn't hate it.
Okay.
To be fair, if I think back, I think Waterboy was my least favorite of the
90s Sandler movies.
Yeah, which I hadn't really thought about.
What's your favorite then?
I mean, we talked about it in the beginning. Wedding Singer is my favorite Adam Sandler movie, like by like a fucking mile.
It's a really sweet, funny movie.
Oh, it's such a sweet movie. But I was a big fan of Happy Gilmore also.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, I think only now, after watching Waterboy, do I remember that I think when I saw Waterboy, I was really excited because I wanted it. It was the third one, I think. It was Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, and then the Waterboy, I think. And they all came out like a year apart. You know? They all came out really
pretty close on one another.
And I loved, I really liked Billy Madison. I loved Happy Gilmore. Mm-hmm. And I think when I saw this, I saw it in the theater, I was a little let down.
Okay.
I didn't think it was as great. I didn't remember that until I was watching it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I didn't hate it.
All right. You got two loves and a didn't hate. So that's pretty good. Well done, Adam Sandler. All right. Well, I really want to thank Michael Chow for coming on for this. Do you have anything that you want to plug?
Mostly just writing right now, but you can follow me on Twitter if you want to, at Sriracha Chow. It's SriRachaChau.
So like Sriracha.
Sriracha and then Chow, Chau.
Okay. And so Michael, you've been involved in a lot of really cool, funny short film projects that are all over
You can check out Dick Ripper. It's on the Heckler Films website.
Gosh, it's the most visceral movie name. Y'all have been on to promote that several times, and every time I cringe just a little bit. Thanks, everyone. Thank you to Michael Chow. I'm Marshall James.
And I'm Laura Weiss.
Saying, you can do it. You can do it all night long. Yeah, it doesn't age well.
The search continues.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. You can follow us online at Do I Still Love It on Instagram, Twitter, and at Facebook. Also, check out our website, doistilloveit.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review our show. It really helps us find new listeners. And please share the show with a friend of yours. Visit our website at timetravelermedia.com. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/timetravelermedia and reach out at timetravelermedia@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.